eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com, and it's here. Boy, it's been a while, Scott. Scott Eklund, our recruiting editor from Dogman, is with me, and it's been a minute since we got together. Obviously, kind of post-spring, you and Kim Grinnells did all the breakdowns on all the positions and everything like that, which was much appreciated by me. But now we're going to get into the real meat, the stuff that people really, really want to know about, which is your take on Kalen DeBoer's new woof on Twitter. This is the breaking news that we're going to be talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, give me your hottest take on the new woof from Kalen DeBoer. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a little bit more hype than maybe the first one that they did, which was just the it wasn't glowing eyes, but it was like a thunderstorm with a woof or something like on it, or I can't remember what it was, but whatever
it's so
it was.
Old now. It's like years ago.
Yeah. So, you know, in today's ever-changing world, I have a feeling they're probably just going to do a new one each year. And that'll be cool. You know, it's just something new to get used to. But, it is what it is. You know, people have fun with it. The coaches seem to be having fun with it. And it brings a bit of levity to a very serious part of the recruiting or to the landscape of college football nowadays.
Well, I think it even took DeBoer a little bit off guard, because just like the initial one, there was a bit of a growing pain by trying to establish what exactly he was trying to do. And so at first he literally just put out I call it the GIF. Some people call it the GIF, but I call it the GIF. He put out the GIF with like no context. And so I literally tweeted out, I added the quote and I said, I think this might be the new woof.
Yeah.
And then he deleted it because he obviously, you know, needed to let people know that it's kind of like the unspoken thing. You have to let people know it's about a commitment without saying it's about a commitment.
Yeah.
If you're the head coach.
Yeah, because he put it back up there, new year, new woof or something like that.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And so that was kind of funny. So they're obviously still working through some things too. Yeah. And it's never a perfect thing.
I always thought it's kind of like the bat signal. I always thought the bat signal was kind of a cool thing.
You know, Hey, maybe you'll be giving them an idea for next year's woof.
Yeah. I always thought that was kind of a cool thing. Cause you know, people are always looking for it. And Batman was always looking for that bat signal. So,
now we can talk about it as a trivia question, Scott, because who was the first commit to ever get the new woof from Kalen DeBoer? Talk to us about Paki Finau.
Yeah, Paki Finau. He's a big guy, could play guard or tackle. Most likely is going to slot in as a tackle. But, you know, he's got the size to be a guard. Actually doesn't have the ideal size for an offensive lineman at, you know, that's going to play a tackle spot in college football, because he's only goes about 6'4", and he's about 260, 265 right now. So he's not the biggest guy in the world right now, but he's got the frame to easily add another 20, 30 pounds, you know, 30 pounds, maybe even 40 pounds, get up to about 305 and be just a mauler at the next level. Has some work to do on his footwork and things like that, but every offensive lineman that comes into college has those kind of things to work on. So great get for Washington, a four-star guy. He had offers from a lot of Power 5 schools. Most of the Pac-12 had offered him. A guy that – but he's been very high on Washington from the beginning. I mean, he had a very strong relationship with Coach Huff. He had a good relationship with Courtney Morgan, and I think Washington – played their cards right with him, pushed him to get that commitment, because that one was one that we had all kind of seen brewing for a little while now.
Yeah, and he's set to play in the 2024 Polynesian Bowl, so that's always a good thing. And, yeah, the offers were strong. I mean, he picked Washington over. You talked about most of the Pac-12, Arizona, Utah, Arizona State, Cal. Boy, you know, Oregon offered him, Oregon State offered him, UCLA offered him. You always kind of want to see from the California kids whether or not USC and UCLA are paying attention. Clearly UCLA was. But then he also had guys like Penn State and Auburn and Miami. And mm-hmm. So that, you know, there was a good cross section of pretty sizable offers for this kid.
Yeah, he's a guy that really wants to, you know, he wants to enroll early. And I think he's going to be a guy that, you know, Husky fans are going to really appreciate the fact that this staff was able to get him in the system. The one thing about that people need to remember about offensive linemen, especially, but all line spots, defensive and offensive, is these are guys that you need to be excited about, but they're almost like the pitchers that the Mariners will draft out of high school. You're not going to see the dividends for a couple of years because he has some work to do. He needs to get stronger. He needs to work on his technique. He needs to just get used to the college game. He needs to get used to going to class and the expectations. And you don't have your parents standing over you, making sure you're getting your homework done. He's going to have to do it on his own, and now, you know, he'll have tutors and everything like that, but just get used to being a college student athlete and everything like that. And so he's not a guy who you're going to see right away, especially with the way Washington recruited the offensive line this past year. He's not going to be on the field right away, but down the road, 2026, 2027, that's when you're going to see him make his impact.
Yeah. And there's certainly something to be said for the way Kalen DeBoer and his Washington staff now kind of approach these things. They're starting to think a little bit more long-term now. I mean, you really, you know, you start to look at some of the trends that are going on in terms of, you know, when players are announcing on Twitter that they've got an offer from Washington, you're seeing not just the 2024 kids. In fact, to be honest with you, if they offer any more 2024 kids, it might be a bit of a shock, because they've already offered, I think, close to 160. Last time I checked, but now they're offered 2020. They've offered a ton of 2025 kids. They've offered quite a few 2026 kids already. Hell, they've even offered a couple kids that aren't in high school yet. They'll be in high school in the fall. That's how kind of crazy this goes. And they're not quarterbacks. They're not quarterbacks. So, you know, I'm just kind of curious, before we kind of get into some of the trends that we're seeing with this staff and how they offer and how many they offer and things like that, I'm just kind of curious now, Scott, with how you think the coaches are going to do in terms of maintaining these commitments, because clearly Austin Mack was an outlier. He could have been a 2024 kid, but he reclassified. He's coming in this summer, which separated him from one of Washington's 2024 commits, which is Garfield quarterback EJ Kamenong. And I'm just wondering, you know, there's been thoughts that he's going to go to other places to check things out. Washington may be looking at other quarterbacks as well. I'm just kind of curious about your sense of how strong it is that this staff is really going to be able to maintain what they get in this age of NIL. Guys looking around, it seems like everyone kind of has an eye in another direction.
Yeah, you know, I think we're still kind of figuring our way out through this whole thing. You know, Chris, I don't know if we kind of know yet how this thing's going to play out. I think we need another 2 or 3 years before we really start to see where things go with NIL, because, you know, there's some rumors that NILs, you know, they had those stuff that went on with Florida's NIL cooperative where they didn't make good on their deals and that they had promised Jaden Rashada, and he ends up at ASU. And so, you know, we're going to see a lot of these, they are called cooperatives, right? Whatever they are, where these schools aren't able to, or the cooperatives aren't able to fulfill the deals that these kids are thinking they're going to be able to sign. And so I think you're going to see some movement from that, where guys aren't looking at NIL as much as they are fit, and they're looking for their relationship with the coaches. And that was always important anyway. But I think you're going to see, once we start to see things start to, the dust start to settle on the NIL groove, and also how some of these coaches are with kids transferring in. And then, I mean, look at what Coach Prime did. He brings in all these guys, and how many guys who transferred in during the winter have already put their names back in the transfer portal for the summer, you know, right, to Colorado. So you're going to start seeing kids get a little bit more savvy in the way that they do things. And they're not just going to jump at the first things. You know, a lot of these deals that are worked out for NIL and for the under the table stuff that was before NIL was legal, and the back room stuff that's going on with transfers and stuff like that, a lot of that is done by parents, especially dads, but also it's done through acquaintances and people that are hangers on and stuff like that. And I think a lot of these kids are going to start getting a little bit more savvy about the way they do these things, and they're going to want things in writing, and they're going to want things that are promised. They're going to make sure that those get delivered. And if they don't get delivered, they're not going to stick with the school that they're at. And then are those cooperatives even going to be allowed to be used by those coaching staffs? Are they even going to talk to those guys anymore for the schools that they're representing? So, you know, there's just a lot of different things that need to settle out, Chris. And I think, yes, in the short term, it's going to be Wild West. It really is. People have described it that way, and I hate to be cliche when I reiterate that, but it really is the Wild West, because there's not a lot of rules right now, and the rules that are out there are not being followed. And so, you know, I don't know. You know, sometimes, you know, I've thought to myself, I'm like, yeah, they might get a bunch of commitments before the senior season, but since kids can now take unlimited amounts of official visits, who's to say that these kids lock in their five in the summer, and you think, okay, we got them, they can't take any more official visits, and then they go and they're going to go on 2 or 3 more during the fall. And so it's there's a lot of stuff that's just changed. I mean, the landscape of recruiting in college football over the last 18 months has just completely flipped, you know, done a complete 180, and made it so that it's really hard to read whether kids are going to sign with a university or not.
Yeah, and I do think it's really going to test coaches like Kalen DeBoer and just how much they believe in their culture and mm-hmm. how much they believe in the continuity of it and just maintaining the status quo and continuing to really focus on their core beliefs, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot, because, you know, we've talked about a lot of times, you know, if your culture is good on the inside, then everything else can kind of flourish as a result on the outside, including what happens on the field. We saw it last year when Washington went 11-2. Now, there are some people that look at the end result and figure out a mechanism to try to achieve that result. That's a lot trickier. And I think we're seeing more of that with NIL because of the potential for short-term gains. What I do think is happening in a trend right now with NIL, we're seeing more and more of the negative stories come out, not the positive stories. We're starting to, you talked about the Florida Collective with Jaden Rashada and how that kind of blew up. I think just as a culture, and I'm talking about this more just generally, we're used to really kind of digging in on the negative stuff instead of the positive stuff. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to find more and more examples of players and families not necessarily getting screwed over, but not getting what they expected. Let's put it mm-hmm. that
way. Yeah.
That this thing ends up being way different than what they, than maybe either what they were promised or what they anticipated. The ones who are doing it the right way are getting representation, whether that's an agent, whether that's a lawyer, whoever it is. They're the ones that are looking at it as a legitimate business deal. Because when you go into this for the first time and you're going up against someone in business who wants to pay you money, well, they got to that lot in life because they're good business people.
Mm-hmm.
They understand. They've been on that side before. It's like recruiting. Again, it's just a whole separate culture of recruiting, like a coach. When a family is there in their living room and a head coach comes in, it's like the fox in the hen house, right?
Mm-hmm.
The coach has been there a zillion times. They know every trick in the book. They're going to throw everything they can at you to get you to sign on the dotted line. It's no different in NIL. So hopefully, not only do we get to see more of the positive stories to kind of hammer out the negative stuff, although I do have a sinking feeling that the longer this goes on, we're going to see some real things blow up. We already kind of have in the last month or so. I think The Athletic has had a couple stories about some NIL stuff that's gone horribly south.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that people, hopefully families, will get wise to it. And the more and more we stack these classes on top of each other that have been dealing with NIL and the real world, that hopefully they will make their changes and understand that they have to really protect themselves.
Yeah.
And hopefully they can, like you said, they can maybe take that away from the equation so they can really focus more on fit from a football and school perspective, and let the agents and the lawyers and whatever else deal with the business people when it comes to NIL.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with you, Chris. Like I said, it's just got so much that needs to kind of settle out and figure out. So I still think we're, you know, less than 5 years, but more than 2 or 3 years. I think we're right in that range about where we're going to be able to find, see how things kind of settle out in that realm. And, you know, just real quick, Chris, you know, and I posted a link to this, sounds like EA Sports came to an agreement, in principle on that the players are going to be paid, by them, you know, and for their participation, and they can opt in and get paid by the video game system. So, you know, that's another avenue that these kids are going to be able to get paid, for, on, you know, for NIL, and that's going to be real interesting.
Well, yeah, and to really not get too much into the weeds, the other thing that just happened this week is the National Labor Relations Board is trying to file a complaint against University of Southern California, the Pac-12, and the NCAA, because they want to have the UCLA players, or excuse me, the USC players, treated, they need to be treated as employees, actual employees of the school.
Yeah.
Well, when you have that aspect and you're butting it head first against a situation where in these NIL worlds, these people are being treated as contracted people, how is that all going to work?
Yeah.
It just feels to me like that's oil and water. That's not going to mix.
Yeah, don't get me started on that whole
NIL. No. But I'm just saying, in the real world,
yep.
you can't have a situation where someone is an employee and then on a separate entity, completely independent of the school, because the people have, fans need to remember, NIL is completely independent of the university.
Yeah.
At least in terms of, now that also brings in a bit of a wrench because it depends on the state you're dealing with.
Yep.
But at least for Washington, it would be completely independent of what the school is. School has nothing to do with NIL.
Mm-hmm.
So unless the state legislature decides to get involved and have the school act as its own agent for NIL, which it could absolutely do, it could absolutely do that, you're going to see more and more of these complaints come up where the schools are going to have to deal with this potential that the players could end up actually being employees, and how that works with NIL is something that I haven't quite figured out yet. So again, it just kind of goes to your general point that there is a lot of work, a lot of moving parts to this whole thing, and how it all fits together, I don't think anybody knows at this point.
Yep, you're right.
Absolutely. So let's go back to the actual recruiting part of this whole thing, because that's the focus of our podcast today. I'm really curious as to what you see some of the trends are with Kalen DeBoer and his staff, maybe in comparison to the previous couple staffs that have been here. The one thing that I did find as a constant, and it goes back to this thought about maintaining commitments, I really do feel that Kalen DeBoer follows the same blueprint as Chris Peterson and Jimmy Lake, as I don't think he pushes. I think he has so much faith in his culture and doing things the right way that they will invariably weed out the people that they need to get. Like it's like a filter. Invariably, the people that are supposed to be at Washington are the ones that absolutely fit the culture, fit what they need on the field, and all of those other intangibles. That I have found to be fairly similar. But I have, you know, this whole thing of like almost 160 offers already, I have found that to be obviously quite different than what Chris Peterson and Jimmy Lake had done in the past. Are there any other trends or any other things that you feel have kind of separated DeBoer and his staff from what the previous staffs have done?
Well, you know, Chris, you kind of made the mention, you know, Washington just has offered a lot more younger guys and than they did under Chris Peterson. And Jimmy Lake really didn't get the chance because of the way things were set up during COVID. And even in 2021, they still were under some restrictions on when guys could take official visits and stuff like that. So who knows what Jimmy Lake would have ended up doing if he had had success and been able to stick around. But, you know, just they've been super aggressive on the recruiting trail, making offers to guys. They're treating it like a lot of schools are right now, which is the offer means we're super interested in you. It doesn't always mean that it's committable. You know, they wouldn't necessarily take a commitment from some of these guys right now. But we want you to know we like you. And we think you've got potential, and we're going to continue recruiting you and things like that. So it gets them in the door with the kid. And then it's kind of a free for all to, you know, hey, get up here. We're going to have you come on a visit, or hey, maybe, you know what, we want to see a little bit more from you. So we're not going to have you come up for a visit quite yet, cause we're not ready to get that serious about you, but we liked you enough to offer you the offer is still good, but we're not ready to take your commitment yet. And the kids, most of these kids aren't going to commit on the spot. That's part of the thing that the coaches need to understand and why their job is such a walking a tightrope is if I make an offer to this kid right now, but we aren't really ready to take him because we like a few more guys, but we want to be in with him in case we don't get some of these other guys. If I offer him, is he going to jump on the chance to commit? And so, because then you run into some other hairy stuff that you got to deal with, you know, where, well, we're not quite ready yet. And, you know, let's just take our time and things like that. But, you know, so it's a real fine line that they have to walk through. And that's why these coaches, especially Eric Schmidt, that this is one thing that several edges that I've talked to recently have told me is just that Eric Schmidt have told them straight up, hey, I don't make guys offers right away just because I like them a lot. I want to get to know them. I want to get to know their parents and their family and their group that they're around. I want to see how they are in the classroom. He wants to get to know the whole kid before he actually makes an offer. And some of them have really appreciated that he's taken his time to make offers to them. The most recent was Keona Wilhite, edge down at Sal Point Catholic, said, you know, he could have offered me a while ago because we've been talking for over a month, but he wanted to get down and see me run. But he also wanted to do the stuff on the back end, you know, where he got to know me, got to know my parents, got to know my coaches, and scouted me and evaluated me and made sure that I was a guy that they wanted in the program. And I think that's been big for Eric Schmidt out on the recruiting trail, is being honest with these kids and up front. And I think the kids appreciate the upfront, the upfront style, you know, that, hey, we're not going to offer you right away, but it doesn't mean we don't like you. So some kids need to be offered early for you to even be in it, you know, down the line, and some don't. And so it's a lot of it's just being able to read kids and read families and read the way things are going.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, in his specific example, he goes to the same school as another edge player, Elijah Rushing, who is elite. I mean, yep. Every school in the country is after Elijah Rushing. And it could have been very easy for Schmidt to just go down there and offer both of them on the spot, right? Mm-hmm. Just, hey, we're just throwing out offers like they're candy, mm-hmm. You know, like they're golden tickets to Wonka's Chocolate Factory. Just here you go. You know, we don't really care if it's special or not. We're just here you're going to go. But to separate them the way they did, it probably makes sense to a guy like Keona Wilhite, because Wilhite is looking across the line to his guy Rushing and going, okay, that's the guy that everyone's focused on. I wonder if anybody is interested in maybe what I have to offer. And now all of a sudden you have Eric Schmidt coming to him after talking to him for a bit, like you said, getting to know him, his extended family, everything about him. They come back and offer. I think that offers gravity to the offer.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chris. The other thing about Wilhite, though, and we're going to talk about offers and things like that later here in the discussion, but the thing about Wilhite is if you watch his film, he can play multiple positions. So Washington had to, you know, because he plays some 3-eye, he plays some 4-eye, he plays some edge, he plays some 7 technique. He does a lot of different things in that system, and he only played in 6 games because of transfer rules. So, you know, Washington needed to do a lot more in-depth study and evaluation of what he can do and what he brings, as opposed to Elijah Rushing, who you just watch him. And I mean, his name is so perfect. I mean, if ever there was a name for either a running back or an edge rusher, it's Rushing, you know? And
right.
And so when I remember seeing him as an underclassman, he was a sophomore coming up to be his junior last year at this time. And just was being really impressed with his length and his size and his get off and all those and his athleticism, all those different things that you can say about him. And so he was kind of a no brainer. But, you know, Keona Wilhite is a guy who you need to take a little bit more time with. And so you can see the different approaches there.
Yeah. And again, you mentioned some of the other things that were going on for him that makes sense on doing a little bit more due diligence. The other thing is it's just basically when you talk about the versatility of a player like Wilhite, sounds to me like they're trying to find another player that could fit the role of what Voit Tanufi is doing right now for them.
Yeah, they've got different body styles and playing types that they want in a guy that they end up bringing in for the edge spot. And they're actually treating him a lot like, because I've talked to the kids, they're acting a lot like, you know, how they have a field corner and a boundary corner, right? And the boundary corner needs to be more able to hold up against the run, whereas the field guy needs to be able to hold up more and be a little bit better and more dynamic in pass coverage. And well, the field edge guy needs to be able to hold up against the run a little more than the boundary guy does, because the boundary guy is the one that they expect to rush the quarterback. So you're looking for different body sizes and styles of play and all those different things. So it's real intricate the way the coaches have to offer these guys.
One trend that I was going to ask you about, and I think has been talked about a little bit on the message boards, just because it's actually a class behind, it's the 2025 class. It's just the sheer number of quarterbacks. It's clear to me, just reading between the lines and having done this for a little while, they've already offered 10 quarterbacks for 2025. Yeah. And those are just the ones we know of publicly.
Yeah.
There could be other guys out there that either don't have Twitter accounts or haven't announced it publicly, what have you. It just seems to me that they're setting themselves up to take a couple quarterbacks. And it makes sense because Michael Penix is gone after the 2023 season. Dylan Morris will be gone after 2024. So then you really get young after that. I mean, really get young, because the quarterbacks that are going to be on the roster by that point are, we're talking about walk-ons right now.
Yeah.
And guys like Austin Mack and I assume EJ Kamenong.
Mm-hmm.
Both by that time would be either freshmen, Mac might be a sophomore at that time, depending on if he plays. Who knows? But you can tell just scoping that out how much younger they're going to be. But are you surprised that they've gone after so many quarterbacks so early for that particular class because of so far in advance that this is already happening?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. You know, if you look at the offer list, and I mean, it's pretty sizable, but there's three quarterbacks that they've offered that they almost have no chance with, in my opinion. And that's not because Ryan Grubb isn't a good recruiter or Washington isn't appealing. It's just these guys are being recruited by schools across the country and everything like that. Bryce Underwood is their top guy on their board. He's the, what is he, number three nationally overall. Yeah. Overall, and when I say overall, I mean, I'm talking any position. He's number one at his position, but number three overall in the country, regardless of position. Akili Smith, I just don't see him ending up at Washington. I just don't. That's just not something I see. And then a guy by the name of Deuce Knight, they made an offer to him back in, I want to say it was like January, something like that. And he's a kid out of Mississippi, and he had Washington and maybe two or three other offers. His connection to Washington is the fact that Michael Penix and his older brother were a passer receiver combination at Indiana together. And that's how he knows that's how Washington kind of got in touch with them. And he was really interested. Didn't end up making a visit up to the University of Washington, though, because he got offers from pretty much every SEC and ACC school. And so he's got Clemson, Georgia, a lot of big schools. So you can almost eliminate the top three off of the list that 247 has ranked, because I just don't see Washington ending up with any of those guys. But then you have Husan Longstreet out of Centennial, which is in Corona, California. Michael Tollefson, nicknamed Butter, by the way, out of J. Sarah Catholic. That's the school that Nick Harris and Dante Pettis and Luke Wattenberg all went to. And yeah. So Washington has a lot of success with guys coming out of there. Then you have Madden Ayamaliava out of Warren High School down in Downey, California. Well, his brother is Nico Ayamaliava. He's the one that went to Tennessee and set that record for $8 million NIL or whatever it was. Then you have Dash Byerly out of Chaparral in Temecula. Jackson Colick, who I like a lot. I think he's an underrated guy out of Laguna Beach. Leo Hannon out of Servite. And then the last one that they just offered is a guy by the name of Jaron Sagapolotele out of James Campbell High School in Iwa Beach, Hawaii. I think that's up on the south, or down on the south shore. I don't know exactly.
Eva Beach is by Kapolei, which Eva is on Beach, the far, okay, almost far west side.
Oh yeah,
of Oahu.
Okay, so the west side, yeah, of Oahu. So, he's and you watch him throw. If you watch his film, he's going to remind you very much of Michael Penix, and not just because he's a lefty. His throwing style is almost identical to Michael Penix's. It's really freaky watching it. I was like, did I pull up the right tape? Because it looked like Michael Penix. So definitely a guy to keep an eye on as well. So Washington, I think, has a chance to pull in a really good one or two guys from this class, the 2025 class. And they're going to need it, Chris, like you mentioned, because you've got Austin Mack and EJ Kamenon committed. You know, I don't know. Or I'm sorry. Austin Mack's already signed. He's coming in the summer. And then EJ Kamenon. But like you said, Chris, after 2024, those are the only two guys left on the roster that are scholarships unless you get some more guys in. So I think they're going to take at least one more in the 2024 class. Demarcus Davis is the guy that they've kind of targeted. And that's going to be an interesting guy to watch because I think he's going to try and visit on the 23rd of this of June. But, it's real interesting to see. It's going to be real interesting to see, does Washington take two in the 2024 class and the 2025 class? Because that's going to be real difficult to sell to kids, taking four in 2 years.
Yeah, but again, the way the transfer portal is working nowadays, yep, and everybody gets the freebie, it might be less hard work to sell it than it used to. There's no doubt about that.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
The two names that stick out there, obviously Akili Smith Jr. Akili Smith Jr., for people that don't remember, his dad was Akili Smith, who played at Oregon.
And how old does that make us feel, Chris?
Well, yeah, we're not going to go there.
Yeah.
But the interesting part about that is that I'm assuming you're talking because of his connection with Oregon is the reason he would never even look at Washington. But we've already seen this happen with Elijah Molden. So is it impossible? No. Is it improbable? Probably. I mean, but it seems to me that if Ryan Grubb has offered him and showed him that intent, would the family listen? I would think that they would. Given if you look at what Michael Penix, this is what I wonder, is this the whole deal with Michael Penix? How much of recruiting a quarterback now has now been opened up nationally because of what Michael Penix has done? You talked about Deuce Knight, for instance, coming from Mississippi. You know, there was a possibility that could happen. You know, you talk about Bryce Underwood, the top guy in the country. He's from Michigan. You know, we know Penix is from Florida. You know, most of these kids are from California. And now you talk about Sangapolo Tele from Eva Beach. I can't even remember the last time Washington recruited a quarterback from Hawaii. You might have to go all the way back to Marcus Mariota. I don't remember, honestly. It could be that far back. So they are really intent, and clearly Ryan Grubb and his staff have done a ton of homework, understanding that they're probably going to have to get two quarterbacks in this class.
Yeah. In the 2025 class.
For 2025, for sure. But they're, but this is, you know, we knew, and, you know, the coaches can't talk publicly about specific recruits. But we do ask them general recruiting questions about these trends, about, you know, how's the portal going to affect things? How does NIL affect things? There's no question. Kalen DeBoer made it very clear that they were really scrambling for parachutes in that 2022 class. They really were trying hard to just kind of keep that thing together with duct tape and baling wire. But once they got that done, I think, you know, Courtney Morgan deserves a ton of credit for really getting this thing off the ground and really making inroads, not just for the 2023 class, because I still think even the 2023 class, I don't think they felt fully here in Montlake at Washington. I still feel like part of it had one foot out the door. You know, the coaches still had family members that were coming in from other parts of the country. They had to settle their families in. They had to buy houses. They had to just kind of get ingrained in what's going on in the area. So I think now, though, now that they've gone 11-2, now that they have that story to sell that Kalen DeBoer has talked about so much, now that they have that in their back pocket, I think they've really hit the recruiting trail hard. And also using that extra week that they got because they finished spring football early. I think those two things have really helped propel them to feel really, really comfortable about not just recruiting kids for 2024, but really hammering the 2025 class. And this is why I think we've seen so many offers out to so many players. Like quarterback, I mean, like 10 quarterbacks, that's as many players as they've offered as athletes or cornerbacks. You know, usually, you know, you'd only see four or five quarterbacks in a class get offered, whereas you might see 15 cornerbacks get offered or 20 receivers get offered. And clearly, yeah, Jamarcus Shepherd is killing it. He's offered kids from most classes at this point. He's offered kids in the 2026 class. That said, it really does feel like they're settled in. The staff is really focused. Courtney Morgan has really helped develop the system to hit the ground running when these coaches need to go on the road, sell the story of 11-2, sell the story of Michael Penix as a Heisman Trophy candidate, sell all the positives of the program. And I think we're starting to see the results of that, even though they only have three verbal commitments. That may seem a little counterintuitive, but in this climate of recruiting, and especially the way that Kalen DeBoer wants to make these guys feel really, really good about their commitments to the point where they're not going to look around once they make that commitment to Washington, I think we're really starting to see this thing bear fruit.
Yes, I fully agree with you, Chris. It's taken a while. They just – you know, some of these guys, they, because, you know, DeBoer and his staff were coming from schools that weren't on the level that Washington typically recruits at, Fresno State, Indiana, Vanderbilt, you know, Purdue, even to a certain extent. You know, those are schools that didn't recruit the same kind of kids that Washington did. And so it's taken a while for these coaches to get used to recruiting at this level. And I don't mean getting used to that. It's a bad way of saying it. They're actually, you know, they hadn't been able to build some of the relationships with these kids because, yeah, Fresno State might have come in and offered, or Indiana, Vanderbilt, Purdue, but the kid didn't spend a lot of time talking to those coaches because those coaches, they just weren't going to go to those schools. So they didn't develop those relationships. And now they've had a chance, you know, over the last year and a couple months to build relationships with 2026, 2025 guys that, excuse me, the pollen's getting to me. But, you know, they've been able to get in with these guys early and develop these relationships. And I think that's when you're going to start seeing it really pay off.
Yeah. And the other thing that I would say, too, is I think coming from some of these schools, like, you know, DeBoer and Grubb coming from Fresno, as well as Lee Marks and William Inge and Chuck Morrell and some of these other coaches, Schmidt and what have you. And then you see a Jamarcus Shepherd coming from Purdue. You see, you know, some of these other coaches coming in from other places. I just don't get the sense that they're all that deterred from still trying to uncover that gem, you know, trying to find that diamond in the rough. You know, you look at some of the guys that are going to come in to visit and stuff like that. And people may just look at the stars. And I know that there's the argument about the stars and all that. And let, you know, you can go back to Keanu Wilhite, for instance. You know, a kid, like you said, only played a half a dozen games this year because of transfer rules. He's on one side. The other side of the defensive line is a guy who's a clear All-American, can go anywhere in college that he wants to go. So clearly, Wilhite's probably getting overlooked. I can almost guarantee you Eric Schmidt is probably paid 10 times more on Keanu Wilhite than Elijah Rushing. It has nothing to do with the fact that they don't feel as confident getting Rushing. I just think that it's a coach like Schmidt really, really digging in to see if this kid, if there's something about this guy that no one else is seeing. Because they're used to doing that. At Fresno, they had to do that every day. And that's why I just don't feel like this staff is deterred by going after a player that maybe others aren't seeing the thing. It's like when Chris Strasser went to, you mentioned Jay Sarah, for instance.
Yeah.
You've got Luke Wattenberg, all American, all everything, he was the guy who was the prototypical left tackle. He was highly rated 24/7. Every recruiting service had him as the guy. Who was next to him? Oh, this guy, Nick Harris. He's not too tall. He's not too big. Serviceable. But Chris Strasser really honed in on Nick Harris and goes, you know what? This kid's tough. He's nasty. He's getting after it all the time. High motor, high IQ, knows what to do on every play, flawless execution, technique sound for a high school player at that position. I think he is a guy who could really blossom under the right tutelage in college. Now he's in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel like there is some of that with this particular staff. I don't think they necessarily see it as a challenge. I just don't think they stray away from it. I don't think they go away from it because they're blinded by the stars or blinded by, oh, but we can get this guy. You know, I have this feeling about the staff, and I don't know if you feel the same way about it.
No, I honestly, Chris, I don't know about you because, you know, I kind of took over the recruiting stuff from you a little bit. But I don't know how you were back in the day when you were doing this on a regular, you know, day-to-day basis, but, I love finding the diamond in the rough. I love seeing a kid and just going, this is a guy nobody's talking about. Why? Why is nobody talking about this kid? Am I missing something? And then you find out that no, you weren't missing anything. The guy that the Seahawks drafted out of West Virginia, that was the pass rusher. Bruce Irvin. He was the one. I remember I got ridiculed by people for interviewing him and promoting him on the JUCO site because he hadn't even played a down of JUCO football. But I was like, this guy's just killing it. He went on to be an All-American. You know, yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that's fun. You remember when I saw Kaysen Williams? Remember the first time I told you about him? The first time I told you about the tight end who ended up being out of Kennedy, ended up being really good when I went to watch Nate Williams play. And then I saw this sophomore tight end running like a deer, you know, and just thought he was unbelievable. Ends up being really good at the University of Washington. So, you know, that's one of the fun things. And I think it's something that the coaches I don't think they want to fill their class or their roster with diamonds in the rough and guys that they go discover that nobody else knew about. But it's kind of fun to find those and you know, exercise your talent evaluating chops a little bit. And I don't think this staff, like you said, Chris, shies away from it. I think they also know that the second we offer, you're going to see at least five or six more schools come in with offers that are like, hey, if Washington offered, we're going to offer.
Yeah, and it's like for instance, Valens, the kid that just came in for the unofficial visit from the area.
Yeah.
And I know he's going to take an official visit to Washington State and all that. I know there's schools on him and things like that. This is a player, he reminds me a little bit of the recruitment of a guy like Joe Tryon. And it's just, do you want, especially in your own backyard, do you want to be the school that missed out on that kid? Now, they don't always work out. I mean, we've seen right now with Siouxsie Finau, there was a chance that he could turn out to be a real beast, and he may still. He just won't be doing it at Washington. They don't always work out, but do you want to be that school that has to explain to people why you didn't recruit that guy who ended up turning into a monster?
Who ended up turning into, the wide receiver from Davis that nobody took a chance on.
Yeah, or for instance,
Chris Peterson. That's a all pro in the NFL now.
Right, so. And like Chris Peterson, when he came from Boise State to Washington, he brought a few players. One of those players was Drew Sample. Drew Sample is literally at Newport High School, like, what, 10-minute, 15-minute drive from UW?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
How do you want to explain yourself if you're Steve Sarkisian and you haven't been recruiting this guy? He comes in, kills it at Washington. Now he's in the NFL. Now we're using all the local examples. Those are the most poignant ones because they're the ones closest to everybody here that's at UW. And they'll find those guys. I mean, a guy like Jacob Lane could be that guy. We don't know until he comes out and plays and does his thing.
Yeah.
You know, Zach Durfee, a guy from the played at Sioux Falls. I know that Schmidt and those guys are banking on him to be that diamond in the rough that all of a sudden goes berserk when he gets a chance to do it. But you're right. I mean, ultimately for me, it's the combination of not shying away from finding those diamonds, but at the same time, making sure that your class is really balanced, where you've got leaders, you've got captains, you've got guys that are going to take control, but you also have guys that are team players that are, this is all the subtlety of it. This is all the stuff in terms of the intangibles that these guys really have to put together that most fans, you can't quantify it. So there's just no way to know, right? There's just no way to be able to put a numerical value on it when you're rating and ranking these kids, but it's so important to the overall balance of the class. And that's why I think sometimes finding these guys who, maybe they're team leaders, but I remember back in the day where, one of the trends 10, 15, 20 years ago was to try to get as many quarterbacks in your class as possible. Even if they weren't going to play quarterback in college, you wanted a guy who was maybe a quarterback in high school who could turn into a defensive back or turn into a receiver or something like that, because you wanted to get as many of those captains, those leaders, those guys on the team as possible. And I don't know how to quantify. I don't know what that's like today. I don't know how, you know, programs put those things together. But that was one thing that kind of came to my mind when I was thinking about trying to find the right balance, trying to find the proper chemistry when you put together a particular recruiting class in like this cycle, for instance.
Yeah. And it's tough. It's tough because you have to figure out, you have to have guys who are dudes. You have to have guys who are kind of, let's say just the guys who toe the line questionably, you know, with the attitude and things like that. But you love them because they're athletes and they're great players. And then you have to have those guys who are your blue collar. A vast majority of your team is going to have to be the blue collar guys, especially a team like Washington. You know, Washington's never going to be on the level of Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, probably Michigan even.
Not in terms of recruiting, in terms of the product in the field, they can compete.
But you're just not going to get the same kind of guys in at Washington that you are in those other schools. Maybe every now and then you can hit on some really good guys and have a roster full of some really good players that were really good players coming out of high school. But what Washington really has to rely on is development and turning three stars into four stars. Whereas a lot of these schools that recruit really high level guys, not all of them, obviously Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, they get their guys to play pretty darn well. But you see a lot of these schools, Texas A&M is a perfect example, USC, UCLA, these are schools that always used to get tons of great players. And I'm not saying they haven't had turned those guys into great players, but some of those guys have become big, great players despite the coaching that they got. And, you know, they coached five stars into four stars. Well, Washington, if they can recruit three stars and coach them into four stars, then you're kind of even with schools that take five stars and turn them into four stars. So, you know, it's that real weird fine line that the coaches have to walk, where they have to find guys that are going to be good in the locker room. And you want a vast majority of your guys to be guys who buy into the program, buy into the culture that you've built and are continuing to build, and also guys who are not going to be upset if they're playing more of a backup support role rather than starting. Because you get a bunch of these guys who are peacocks that come in and fluff their feathers, and there's just not going to be enough room for them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There's no question, and it's such a huge part of it. And again, it's just something you can't quantify. You can't put a number on stuff like that. And that's why it's difficult to really see what the final product is until you actually watch them on the field and see them perform, whether that's a year, two, 3 years down the road. You know, it's like Braylon Trice, for instance. Braylon Trice came in as a reasonably rated recruit. Wasn't one of those can't miss five-star guys. But he was very solid three-star, had a very good offer list. But it was like, okay, let's wait and see. What can he be? I remember when Akaika Molloy said that he could be the next Joe Tryon. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it seemed a little outlandish, I have to admit. Because it was a while ago. It was when Akaika Molloy was still at Washington. And Braylon Trice hadn't really done anything to kind of warrant that kind of attention or praise. I'll tell you what, Akaika Molloy knew what the hell he was talking about, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Braylon Trice is an absolute animal right now. And if he doesn't end up being the next Joe Tryon, it would be a shock.
One thing I'll say, Chris, is that when he made that comparison, I didn't necessarily disagree with the comparison. I just thought it was setting the kid up.
Well, it was early. Yeah.
I don't think you should be saying that this early. Yeah, you know,
it didn't feel warranted at the time.
Yeah.
But you have to remember, the position coaches and those players, they spend so much time together. If anybody is going to know the potential of a certain player, it's going to be that coach. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you just hope that maybe it's not hyperbole and that the player with the proper, training and things like that, strength and conditioning, all that stuff, can finally reach his potential. And boy, we saw it at the end of last year for sure with Trice. And, you know, the sky is the limit for a guy like that right now. That he is developing the way, exactly in the way than Akiko Moloi would have anticipated it had he, you know, stayed at Washington, for instance.
Yep. So, I agree.
Hey, I apologize. We went way off track on that, but I thought it was a good, really good discussion to have. And it does set us up for the second half of our show. We're going to be right back. Scott and I are going to be talking about the scholarship numbers. We're going to be talking about the specific offers to a lot of these 2024 guys, including one that came out in the last week or so that was a very interesting one that we're going to talk about. And also the official visits coming up. We're a month away, literally a month to the day, where a lot of these official visits are going to start to happen at Washington. And then, of course, I've got to ask Scott, who are the next guys to pop. So you're stick with us. We're going to be right back. It's the guys from Dogman.com here on Dogman Radio.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code Rebag10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's Rebag.com. And use promo code Rebag10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, we're back. It's Chris Fetters of Dogman.com here with our recruiting editor, Scott Eklund. And we just spent a ton of time kind of laying the groundwork for what we're going to be talking about right now. And that is kind of where the numbers are at for the 2024 recruiting class and a lot about these offers as well. Where do you kind of want us to lead this discussion right now, Scott? Where do you want us to go?
Well, let's talk about the numbers first. Well, you know, the class numbers, how I kind of see it, how we kind of see it breaking down. Oh, do you just want me to go? I thought you were going to ask me. Sorry about
that. I want
that.
You to roll.
Okay, man. Sorry. I'm like, that's
hey,
my bad.
You got nothing but green grass ahead of you, okay. My friend. You all run.
All right. Well, basically, we've been saying for a while it's going to be 20 to 22 guys. It's not going to be 25. I just don't see them taking 25 guys in the class. Obviously, it's so fluid, and I want to put that out there as an asterisk for pretty much anything that we say right now, because the numbers are so fluid and changing all the time. Are they going to get in a portal guy? Are they going to get in? Are they going to maybe offer a walk-on that is a young guy that they said, hey, you come in, you walk on, you prove to us that you're good, we're going to give you a scholarship, and then they're on the scholarship for the next 4 years. So a lot of things can change, but as of today, we're saying that Washington will take 20 to 25 guys. It'll break down to one or two quarterbacks, likely two running backs, three wide receivers, at least one tight end, possibly two, three offensive linemen. They've already got one in the boat. By the way, they've already got one wide receiver in the boat, and Le'Veon Bell or Landon Bell out of Liberty High School in Henderson, and they've got EJ Kamenong. So those are the quarterbacks. So you've got three commits on the offensive side of the ball, one at quarterback, one at wide receiver, one at offensive line. So those numbers are going to, you're talking about one more quarterback likely, you're talking about two more wide receivers likely, and you're talking about two more offensive linemen likely. But there is the possibility they'll take a fourth if they think they're going to lose somebody from the depth chart, you know, down the road. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. As far as defensive line, I expect three defensive linemen, two or three. Three is the goal, I think. I think that's the number they want to hit with a dart. But I think they'd take two if they found – if you know, they didn't find the right guys to make that third one. They have a lot of guys on their board. That are edges but can grow into defensive line, or guys who they think that are good fits in that way. And then at edge, they'll take two or three guys. At middle linebacker, they're going to likely take two. And at safety, they're looking at three, possibly just two. And then at corner, three, possibly just two. And then guy who just got an offer. I didn't have this on my list of takes in the class, but it sounds like Washington's going to pursue a long snapper, at least one specialist, a long snapper. And they made an offer to one just recently in Cannon Skidmore. He's a long snapper, ranked number, I think he's in the top 10 in the country by Coles kicking that has him there. And he's likely going to be a guy that Washington could add this summer or maybe in the early part of the season if they deem him. They've already made an offer to him. They want to get him up on a visit, and he sounds like he's going to take a visit. So, and that's a story that I'm getting ready to post here very soon. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, 20 to 23 guys or 20 to 22 guys in the recruiting class from that group that I just listed.
So Cannon Skidmore, man, what a great name.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a perfect football name, but it's also, when I first saw Cannon Skidmore, the name, I thought, man, he would have been like an extra in like the Tom Cruise movie, Days of Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Remember like the old racing movie where he was, Tom Cruise was Cole Trickle. How would you like to see Cannon Skidmore going neck and neck with Cole Trickle to the finish line?
Yeah.
You know, I just thought, well, you know, this guy's got a perfect name. And I think you laid it out on the boards. It makes a lot of sense that, you know, Jaden Green, you know, this year is going to be his last year. So if you can bring in a guy.
Well, it's not, Chris. It's not. Yeah, he's got
No, but what I'm saying is, if you have a guy like a Cannon Skidmore in on your roster and Jaden Green is playing his final season, you have a crossover of 1 year and then starting that following year, which would be 2025, then you would have Skidmore for 4 years.
Yep.
So I think they like that idea of having two guys there crossing over, and then you have one guy for 4 years, and then in that fourth year, you would get another guy that could be a crossover guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, yeah, a lot of people will probably really hem and haw about having 1 year where there's two scholarship long snappers. But I'm telling you, it's the one position you don't want to hear about.
Yep.
And sometimes it might even be worth having two scholarship guys, not only in case one gets hurt, for instance, but just the idea is we all remember Jaden Green's first long snap.
Yeah.
And it wasn't pretty. But can we remember any other long snaps since? No.
Not really, no.
I can't. And that's
the
whole
point. And heck, the guy made his first tackle last year, Chris.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. The whole point is you don't want to hear about him. You don't want to and when we're talking about maybe having two long snappers on staff at the same time, scholarship guys, you're literally talking about 84 and 85.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not one of those things where it's you really feel like you're taking away from another. You might be taking away from a fourth string something or other. And that's about it. Because at this point, the way the numbers are shaking out, the way that we're seeing them, they're actually a couple short. They're at 83 currently with some of the recent attrition. So they could, again, you mentioned this, they could offer one of the current walk-ons. So you could see like the punter, Jack McAllister, he could potentially, you know, I'm thinking Jack McAllister and Drew Fowler are probably the two ones that I would expect to be at the front of the line if the staff was going to offer a scholarship. That's my opinion. I don't have any inside knowledge to base that on, but those are the ones that I would think of. But then I also think that, you know, with the portal the way it is, I almost feel like they have to have a scholarship in the back of their pocket for somebody, because you just never know. I think it might be an offensive lineman. It could be a defensive back. But I just feel like since you just don't know what the situation is like at another school, because first of all, you can't tap up a kid. That's illegal. Can't do that. But clearly you can hear whispers. Word gets around. I mean, that just happens. But if you see a guy that, let's say you were maybe recruiting him previously and you really wanted that kid and you really thought that guy would be a perfect fit for what we're doing, and you have that extra scholarship in your pocket, that's where those kinds of things can happen. I'm not saying for instance, a Michael Penix fits that description, because he doesn't necessarily. But the point being is if you have a guy that you know that would be perfect for you, and you happen to have that extra ride in your back pocket, there's nothing stopping you from really making a big push and getting maybe a piece to the puzzle that will help you go from maybe winning 10 games to 11 games, or going from 11 wins to 12 wins. There could be that guy out there that really could be that much of a difference maker. And a lot of times those guys enter the portal and they already know where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. They really already have an idea of what their immediate future is, because most of those guys don't do that blind. They just, I mean, unless they're getting bad advice. If they're getting good advice, they should already know where they're going.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. Yes, correct.
So with 83 total scholarships right now, and like you said, I think that's why – is that why you bumped it up from 20 to 22, is because of the couple extra?
I always hate to say, oh, it's 20. You know, I mean, just give it an exact number, because things are so fluid with the way – heck, it could end up being 18 for all I know, Chris. I mean, it just kind of depends on how many they're going to take in their portal. Where are those guys, if they do take them in the portal, where are those guys in their eligibility, Chris? You know, right. I mean, if they're bringing in a sophomore, he's going to be around for two more years. So now that means that you're not going to have that scholarship right away. And so, you know, it's so fluid and so hard to give a hard and fast number to you guys. So I'm doing my best, but that's why I think that, 20 to 22 is probably the better number.
Well, here's another number that will really kind of underscore why kind of putting a fine point on how many rides that will be available is so, it's such a moving target. Mm-hmm. Is because you would think right now, just looking at the landscape in general of college football, Washington was probably one of the more stable programs in the offseason in terms of transfers, getting players in, having players leave. If you wanted to take a stab of the players that were on the 2022 roster, mm-hmm. how many players have transferred out so far, do you think? What number would that be for you?
Well, that I expected or that have
How many have?
Okay.
Because you may have the number in front of you. I have the number in front of me.
Okay, I don't have the number in front of me, but I'm going to go somewhere around, I think it's around 8 or 9.
Okay. You think it's 8 or 9. And that seems reasonable, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are guys that were on the roster that either didn't play much and I'm not counting like Julius Irvin, for instance, because he medically retired.
Okay. So the ones that I have, Junior Alexander.
Yeah.
That was one. Miles Morrell.
Yeah.
Caden Jumper.
Yeah.
Aaron Dumas.
Yep.
Oh, Zachary Spears.
Yeah.
5. Oh man, this is getting harder. well, we think there's one more guy who's going to leave that just hasn't left yet, but that might be more of a Julius Irvin situation. So, that's the numbers that I have right there.
Okay.
5.
How about 15?
15. Wow.
Okay. Okay. You already mentioned guys like Dumas, right?
Yep.
Okay. You mentioned Alexander. Did you mention, Junior, right?
Junior Alexander. Yeah.
You mentioned Morrell.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Spears.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sam Heward. I forgot. DeMario King.
DeMario King. Sam Heward.
Sam Heward, yeah.
Javion Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Taj Davis.
Yep.
Camden Jumper.
Caden Jumper.
Yeah. Pardon me. Yep. Caden Jumper. My apologies. Vic Kern.
Yeah.
You mentioned Miles Morrell. Owen Prentice.
Mm-hmm.
Waupe Hopa, because he was on the 2020
team.
And he did transfer technically to Hawaii, even though he wasn't on the team. I get that.
The Owen Prentice one is kind of along the same lines as Irvin. Is
Irvin, correct?
Yeah,
right. He's not going to play. Well, at least right now he's not going to play. Who he may decide.
Yes, correct.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Savelle Smalls.
Yeah.
Daniel Haemuli.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron Williams.
Okay. Yeah, because Cameron was on the team all year. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's there you go. I mean, that that's the thing. Washington really is one of the more stable programs. Mm-hmm. And if you think they're losing like 15 guys off of last year's roster, and then you look at what's going on, like at Colorado, for instance, which is clearly the most radical example.
Yeah,
but where they're literally replacing, I mean, what, USC, 60 to 70 guys?
Yeah, didn't USC have a big turnover again? Like, they had 40 last year, right?
They're going through it because, obviously, they're going from year one to year two under under Riley. And then, you know, Oregon's kind of going through that exact same change because they're going from year one to year two under Dan Lanning. Mm-hmm. But even with the year one to year two under Kalen DeBoer, the changeover between Washington is not that great, yet you're still seeing 15 guys, mm-hmm. at least, depending on, again, how you define a guy like a Pehopa or a Prentice or what have you. Because if you wanted to even add Irvin to that list, you could just keep it going if you wanted to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just part and parcel of what we're dealing with right now. It's just the way things are going. And it doesn't feel like it's going to get any easier because of the one freebie for the transfer portal.
Yep. And then you have your grad transfer.
Exactly. Yep. And that's another thing that you have to add into it, because there are certainly guys that have done that, like Raylan Goforth, for instance. Yep. You know, it's come in as a grad transfer. And there are probably others that I'm not thinking about. But like Jabbar, Jabbar Muhammad would not be. I'm trying to
no,
think
he
if, there, if there are any others.
No, I don't think so.
Head.
Zach Durfee was not. Daniel Nagata is not.
Huevas is not.
Huevas is not.
Yeah. So anyways, you will have those from time to time. And to be honest with you, I think they like having maybe one or two grad transfers in a class because they like that infusion of leadership and experience. I think that always helps. But again, you have to be very targeted in what you want to try to do. And I think this staff is showing that they really will try to target certain guys. They just won't go scattergun. It's not going to be that kind of an approach.
Mm-hmm.
I want to move to real quick before we start finishing things up here, Scott, the official visits. We are literally a month away from this Friday to four Fridays from now. We're going to start seeing some official visits come in. It won't necessarily be the big official visit weekend, which will be the following weekend, but this, you know, the weekend of June 16th, you're going to see a number of guys come in, including EJ Kamenong, for instance, but you're also seeing a few other guys that are very high targets for the Huskies. I kind of want to see you lay out these official visits and how you think they're going to go.
Well, you know, one thing I made known in the blog is that I do not expect Washington to have, what did they have, like 18 commits by the end of summer, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And Washington is not going to be there. They're going to have 8 to 10 commitments by the end of the summer, in my opinion. You know, maybe one or two more, but you're just not going to see almost their full class signed by then, because I think Washington really likes where they stand with some of these guys that are going to wait a little while, and maybe even guys who've already committed that they're still going to work on and they want to have spots available for them. So I think Washington's going to hold off. You're not going to see this huge surge. I mean, what was there in over like a 10-day span? Didn't Washington, like, we had a commit story, at least one commit story every day for 10 days, right? Wasn't it Yes. something close to that last year?
And yeah, it was pretty crazy. And
yeah,
that was over an extended, like, 10 days, but because they had guys, I remember Zach Henning actually came in earlier in the week, you know, maybe a few days before all the main guys came in. So yeah, they were kind of, you know, bringing guys in when they could to try to fit them in. And you know what? I mean, we may see that situation where guys who they really feel good about and who they feel good about UW, they may prioritize and say, you know what? If this is the time where I need to come and visit, even if it's like a Tuesday, Wednesday, let's do it, because this is the thing that
and
makes
that's what they're doing
for me.
Yeah, because right now they have 13 guys committed to take official visits on the 23rd. I'm not going to list all the names. They're up on our board, though, or not the board. Well, they are on the board, but they're also.
I'll link them in our story.
Yeah. So, but and then they've got one for midweek. a Wednesday through Friday visit. That's Paul Menke. He's a four-star safety out of Texas. And then they have four guys committed to take official visits on the 16th, which is the weekend before the big weekend. So
that's the one. That's the first one I'm talking about, like a month from today.
Yeah. And those guys, I think you're going to see at least three or four more guys added to that number. And you're probably going to see like four or five guys added in the middle of the week, you know, for visits. But Washington doesn't want to have 20. What do they have? 25 guys on campus that weekend, that big weekend. They don't want to do that again. They want to be able to spend more time with guys. They want to give them the proper treatment and everything like that. And so I think you're going to see them. They're only going to have like maybe 14. They've got 13 committed to visit. And I think there's one more that's going to be added and maybe a second one to be added in that. But they're not going to have 25 guys. They'll have 14 or 15 guys.
And one of those guys is Pacifina.
And so, yes, correct.
Already committed. So, you know, you might have him actually, you know, he'll be taking his official visit. He'll be soaking it all in. He'll be getting the red carpet treatment. But then depending on his personality, depending on how he feels about it, he may end up becoming an extra recruiter for Washington that week.
And there's guys in that list that we're going to be talking about as guys that I think could be the next to pop at the University of Washington. So,
well, we're going to get there. So we're going to get there. So, but it is interesting because back in the day when I was doing a lot of the recruiting stuff like that, we call it the World Tour. And this is where players would go and they would try to hit as many schools in a region that they could, as much as they could. This mostly had to do with like camps and things like that. But I think you're starting to find now when you have more and more players that want to make their verbal commitments before their senior season, so they can get the recruiting part of it out of the way, that they're trying to do more of these world tour type things with official visits. And because you couldn't do it back in the day. Back in the day, you couldn't take official visits until the season started at the earliest. And most of the colleges wouldn't want you to visit during the season because they wanted to focus on the game instead of having to have one eye on the game and one eye on the recruits. Because you only get this one shot to really lay the best impression on a recruit as you can. And so it makes sense, Scott, what you're saying in terms of the numbers and trying to limit them. I don't know if it's because they learned a specific lesson about how they did it last year and how maybe they just want to be a little bit more targeted, but it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that they're trying to do that. But at the same time, it also makes sense that you're thinking there might be some more guys tacked on to that first weekend because, you know, they're trying to make sure that they get in. How much of this now do you think? Because back in the day, getting the last visit was almost as important as getting a visit. Does that mean as much now as it used to?
I think it does. I do. I really do. Because if a guy's going to, okay, so let's say you got a guy and he lines up official visits on the 2nd, 9th, 16th, 23rd of June, right? You want to be that last visit. The problem with being the last visit, Chris, is if the kid gets tired of taking official visits, and I know that sounds weird to people, but they are strung out. I mean, for lack of a better way of saying it, they are tired.
That 48 hours, they probably get maybe,
hours of sleep, five. Yeah, maybe. Five. Yeah. You know, it's not much. Like, I've talked to so many guys that are just like, dude, I'm so freaking tired. I had a lot of fun, but I am so tired right now.
I mean, like, you'll get up, you'll have breakfast like at 6 or 7 in the morning.
You got to be meetings on with the coaches.
You have meetings with coaches. You'll go check out facilities. You'll go downtown. You'll go to the Space Needle. You'll go have lunch. You'll go have dinner. You'll go hang out with the players and they'll show you around. It's nonstop. It's absolute nonstop.
And it just gets to be. So being that last visit is important, but it can be hard too, because maybe the kid doesn't make it that far. So this is the coaches figuring out how to read the player and read the family and understand that, hey, he likes us. He's going to visit even if he's tired. Right.
Yeah.
Or he might just say, hey, I've seen enough. I don't want to even be any more visits. We always go with the last school to get a visit is typically the one that kids choose. But that means, but a guy by the name of Dylan Gresham from San Jacinto, same high school that Washington has Vincent Holmes from, is, you know, he's set his commitment date for the 22nd. Well, he's not visiting any schools until June. And so, you know, it's like,
yeah, we say the 22nd, we're talking about 3 days.
May 22nd. Yeah, May 22nd. So
2 days from now, excuse me.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, okay, so you're still going to take visits after what? What's going on? Okay. So, you know, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of things that come into play in this whole thing. But yeah, I think you always want to have the last visit before a kid makes his decision. The problem is he might just be so tired by the end of it that he might not even make it to your visit, because he might just say, you know what, I'm committing because I'm tired and I really like this school. So
yeah, now if a person like Gresham, like if he's already taken unofficial visits to all these finals,
yes, most of these kids have taken unofficial visits to
school. I was going to say that's one thing. But if he literally hasn't visited and he's making a decision before he takes his official visit, I'd be like, that's a massive red flag.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would take a commitment.
But he hasn't taken any official visits.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
But I'm assuming he's taken at least one unofficial visit to all these schools.
Yeah. He's been to Washington. Yep. Yeah, he's been to Oregon. He's been to Arizona. Those are his final three.
Yeah. So. Okay. All right.
Yep.
So there you go.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's such a weird dynamic that you have to work with when you're talking to these kids. So
and just to nail you down just a little bit, just to make sure I understand, you feel like they're going to add more prospects, recruits, to the first official visit weekend of June 16th. So it could end up being maybe 8 to 10 players.
Maybe not that many. They have four. I could see 6 to 8 somewhere in there.
Okay. You don't necessarily think it's with the idea that they're going to get commitments from those players. Saying overall, because you know, let's say there's 8 for that Friday, and we already know that there's at least 13 for the following weekend, and there's at least one, because you mentioned Paul Mankey coming in earlier.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a total of, you know, what's my math skills?
You have 18 and then add in 1 plus 3.
So you're looking at about 22 to 23, yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
And you said that you don't think Washington's going to end up with more than like 8 to 10 total commitments.
Yep.
By the end of this particular official visit window.
Correct.
So it tells me, do you feel like that, if they add extra visits, you don't necessarily think it's with the idea that they're going to nail down commitments?
Not necessarily. Or the kid has said, hey, I want to take, and I've already got the 23rd schedule with another school and I'm going to commit before my season. So if you want to get a commitment out of me, then you got to take me on that weekend.
Yeah. It certainly makes sense, because you've got to get in the window first. You got to get in. To be able, I mean, you've got to get them on campus.
Well, I mean, for example, Dominic Kirks.
Yeah.
He has visits scheduled to Kentucky, Pittsburgh, and Washington. Washington is the one on the 16th, but there's no one after that.
Right.
That he's planning to take visits to. The problem with that is he's saving them because he might want to take some in the fall, is what he told me.
Sure.
And
That's smart policy. If he doesn't plan on making an early commitment, yet is fine with taking early official visits, and he's from out of town because he's from Cleveland, you know, and you're University of Washington. I'm not saying you're in a position where you take him when you can get him, but you kind of are.
Mm-hmm. He's a guy. I think Washington is saying, hey, we're going to try and get him not to take any more visits and make a commitment to us.
For sure.
That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's their job. Their job is to sell. And they could potentially do that. And if there's no, as you said, there's no official visits on the back end, they may accomplish that. They may very well do that. Now, I think it's going to really test Kirk's willpower. And whether or not he's willing to continue to keep going into December, potentially into January, maybe all the way into the February window, because he's not a five-star can't miss guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a three-star. He's a current three-star guy that has a good offer sheet, but it's not amazing.
And I think wherever he ends up, no matter where he ends up, if Ohio State decides to come in and offer, that one's going to be tough to overcome.
Well, I think sure. It's going to be tough. And it's not like Washington hasn't seen that recently.
Yeah, exactly.
so this is, and again, these are part of the reasons why you really have to you know, find the tightrope between getting these guys to commit early, yet with the understanding that they can get poached at any time. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not like Washington hasn't done a little poaching in their time, too.
Yeah.
They've done it with Washington State forever. They did it with Joe Tryon. They did it with Bishop Sankey. They've done it with others. And so it's not like Washington can't play that game, too. We just haven't necessarily seen it with this particular staff.
Yes.
But it will happen. I can almost promise you it'll happen, because it's just the law of numbers. It just suggests that if they lose to somebody, they're going to find someone that they can grab.
Yeah,
it just kind of makes sense. So now we're going to go to the final, unless you have something else to add on that, Scott.
Let's
go to the final section here of the podcast. We got to put your feet to the fire, my friend. Who's the next to pop?
Well, I mean, I think if they get Cannon Skidmore to take his official visit, I think he's locked in. I think that's a kid who's going to commit to Washington. He only has an offer from Air Force right now, and he's got some other schools looking at him, but they want him to get out to camps and maybe see him in his senior season, and he wants to lock things in. I think he's definitely a guy that people need to keep an eye on. He was up to Washington for their spring preview, and he got his offer yesterday and said Washington's been – talking to him about taking his official visit in June, and he's looking at doing that. So that's one name. I was kind of going through the list, Chris, when you told me you wanted to talk about this, and kind of trying to figure out, okay, who else do I see as a guy who's a possible pop to go to the University of Washington? Right now, I like where Washington stands with a few guys. Decker DeGraff, the tight end out of Southern California, I think it's Glendora. Southern California, 6'4", 230 pounds. He's scheduled for the 23rd of June, though, and he's supposed to take a few other visits before he comes up to the University of Washington. I think he's going to end up at Washington, but it's not going to happen here for at least another month and a half, probably, because you're probably talking the end of June, if not into July, before he makes his decision. Another guy
ironically enough, the school that he's got locked in for an official visit other than Washington is the week before to Michigan State.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we'll have to see. Emmett Mosley is a guy who really likes Washington a lot, but he's got a lot of offers. And so that's a guy who, you know, we're going to have to wait and see on him. He's got visits to Stanford, UCLA, and then Washington to end the month. UCLA he already took the visit to. That was last weekend that he visited UCLA. He's going to visit Stanford on June 2nd. And then he's going to visit Washington on the 23rd. I bet you he fits in at least one more, if not two, in that before that Washington visit. So we'll have to wait and see. A guy who really likes Washington a lot is a guy by the name of Justice Williams out of Oaks Christian High School down in at Westlake Village. That's a school where Nick Montana came from. And who was the big – Eric Kohler was from there.
That's a big-time private school down there.
Yeah, big private school down there, and Justice Williams, 6'4", 195-pound wide receiver, got that big body Washington's really looking at. He's looking at taking a visit on the 23rd to the University of Washington as well. So that's a few guys from the offensive side of the ball. Defense, boy, it's real tough, man. They're in on some guys that just have so many opportunities at other schools. It's really hard to say. I think you might even see a portal guy before you see a defensive guy make his decision. I really like Josh Lair, the safety out of Fort Bend Marshall in Missouri City, Texas, 6'1", 185 pounds. They really like, Kingston Lopa. He's a guy, he's 6'5". He's out of Sacramento area, I believe, down in Southern California, and he's going to be visiting
Grant. Washington. That's
he's at Grant?
Yeah, that's Shaq Thompson's school.
Okay. I thought it was at a different school, so that's my bad. You know, I think if they can get Demarcus Davis on campus, they have a really good shot. Oregon State is a school to keep an eye on for him. You know, I've got a good feeling about where things stand with where is he? Ignacio Tupo, I think is his name. I got to pull him up on my list.
Ignacio Tupo? Yeah,
Tupo out of Palo Alto. I think Washington's doing really well with him too. And I think that when he visits the University of Washington, he's one of those guys that's going to be here on the 23rd. He's another one who could pop. So that's about four or five guys. But on the defensive side of the ball, I think it's going to be a little while before we see some things happen. I could see them getting a Dominic Kirks in June at some point when he takes his official visit, because he's already visited once unofficially. But I think that's going to be one they're going to have to hang on to, because he's going to blow up this fall. People are going to see what he can really do. And I think the defensive side of the ball is a lot tougher to call. You know, Kamara Motuti is a guy that they like a lot and has been a lean to Washington for a long time. And then he took his unofficial visits, still loved Washington, but Oregon blew him away and Oregon gets the last visit. So that's one. But Kamori House is a guy to keep an eye on too. Greg Biggins just did a report on him. He's getting more offers. He got Texas, I think, recently. And he's a guy who could play almost anywhere in the back two thirds of the defense. You know, he can play middle linebacker, he can play outside linebacker, he can play safety, he can play even maybe Husky, because he's so good against the run and he's so good in space. So once again, just a lot of guys that Washington's really doing well with, but I don't know if anybody's going to pop here in the next couple days. I think you're probably looking at another at least 2 or 3 weeks before you see another commitment. And then you'll see a flurry. I think you'll see a flurry before the end of the summer. I think you'll see like 8 more commitments so that Washington gets to 10 or 11. And then they hold tight until they see what they can do during the football season.
Yeah, I was going to ask you too, the Tupo offensive lineman from Palo Alto, you saw him at the Under Armour camp down in L.A., right?
No, he actually didn't show up.
Oh, okay.
Did not show up. The one you're looking at is that picture that is on his profiles from last year.
Gotcha.
Not this year.
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
Yeah, okay. I was hoping to see him. I was totally looking forward to it, but he did not show up. The guy that I did see was Pocky Finau, though. He was there and he looked
right.
Good.
It just feels like he's got a really pretty solid offer sheet already. But it's still, maybe I got the sense that it feels like he's a little bit more of a high riser than an established guy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's raw. So, I mean, there's not a lot of kids that come out of Palo Alto High School.
So he's considered probably one for the future.
But I mean, that's pretty much the way all offensive linemen are. Very few are going to come in and play right away. You're looking at guys 2 or 3 years down the road and what they're going to look like. I mean, honestly, Elisha Jacquette is a guy who could play this year, and Landon Hatchett could play this year, but everybody else are guys that, you know, Zach Henning and the two other linemen, Kale Tafai and drawn a blank on the other one. But those guys, none of those guys are, as much as I love Henning and I think he's got to have a great future, he's Roger Rosengarten Jr.
He had a great spring.
He had a really good spring, but Chris, we both made the mention that he just needs to add size. He just needs to get bigger and stronger. Right. He's not going to be able to hold up against guys that are rushing him that are same size as him, but way quicker. He's not going to be able to hold up against them right now. He needs at least a year, if not two, in the strength and conditioning program, learning the different techniques that Scott Huff is teaching. And then I think you unleash him on the world when he's a redshirt sophomore, when he's a third-year sophomore.
Yeah, and it's Suwane Fasolo is the other player. It also from the Palo Alto area, East Palo Alto, went to a different high school than Tupac.
Yep.
So let's wrap this thing up, Scott. Any final thoughts? We went through – this is a long one, baby. I hope the Washington fans out there enjoy this one, because this was this was an enjoyable chat. I really got a chance to – we got into the meat of a few different topics – and really enjoyed this one. But any final thoughts to kind of wrap this thing up?
No, just that, you know, people need to be patient with this class. They need to be patient with this staff on the recruiting trail. They're still, I don't want to say they're still getting their footing from the sense that they don't know what they're doing, but I think they're still just like reestablishing these relationships and proving to these kids, you know, a lot of these kids didn't, you know, the 2023 kids didn't commit to Washington because they just didn't know what the staff was going to do. And then when they already opened, when they really opened their eyes in the first, you know, what, seven games of the season, and they were, what were they, 6-5-2? And then they went on that run at the end of the season. The kids had already made their decisions. So it's really going to be, I think a lot of 2024 kids are just want to see how the Huskies start the season. I think they want to see how they go. I think they also know they're losing a lot of talent from that next team. And so is Washington going to take a dip in 2024? Who knows? You know, is Ryan Grubb even going to be around? We don't know. There's just a lot of ifs, ands, or buts that you're talking about when it comes to Washington in 2024. And so I think those 2024 kids, these kids are not kids who are stupid. They look at rosters. They look at the way things are going. They look at trends. They have people telling them all these different things. And so they're going to be like, yeah, I'm going to hold off and just see kind of where things go. And I want to talk to Coach DeBoer. What's he going to do if he loses Coach Grubb? Who's he looking at for his next guy? All that different stuff. And I think that eventually Washington will show them, hey, regardless of who we have in here, we're going to be able to get guys onto the NFL, get guys ready for life after football as well. And you're going to have a chance to win a championship. And I guarantee you, and Chris, please, I know you're real big on the realignment stuff. I'm not ready to even talk about that stuff really, but if there's a sense that Washington could be going to the Big Ten, that's going to help increase their ability to recruit these kids and tell them that we're going to have a chance to win a national title with guys like you in our roster playing for the Big Ten rather than they do when they're playing for the Pac-12. That's just reality right now in the Pac-12 and how it's viewed by people, even kids out here on the West Coast. So a lot of stuff is still going to play out here over the next 6 months. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And for the record, I'm not into the realignment stuff right now.
Oh, you aren't?
Oh, I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready to see the dominoes fall the way they are.
Yeah. Okay.
But we're not there yet. It to say that realignment would not play a part in recruiting would be foolish. I think this is like a four-ring circus because you got realignment, you got NIL, you got transfer portal, you got the regular high school stuff going on. What the coaches have to do, and they're getting some amazing salaries right now, but really when you break down all the different balls that they've got to keep juggling in the air, the more it makes sense why they get paid what they get paid, because it's really almost impossible to keep it all straight. It would be tough to keep it all straight with like 10 guys, let alone 30 guys,
yeah,
let alone 85 guys on a football team, Division I football team. It is absolutely incredible. So I agree 100%. You know, the one thing that we know about the University of Washington is it's not moving. It's going to be in Seattle, no matter if it's a part of the Pac-12, Big 10, Big 12, SEC, ACC. Whatever conference acronym comes out of whatever realignment ends up happening, whether it happens in 6 months, 6 years, who knows? University of Washington's always going to be in Seattle, Scott. That's never going to change. So all this other stuff may affect recruiting to a certain extent, but just in what portions and how, you know, what are the percentages that the portal impacts recruiting? What are the percentages that NIL impacts recruiting? What are the percentages that academics impact recruiting? You got me. And this is why I have always considered recruiting to be half art and half science.
Yeah.
Because there is a bit of a science to it, but at the end of the day, you're still dealing with kids and you're still dealing with humans and you're still dealing with parents and you're still dealing with coaches and trainers and everybody else that comes into the equation. And they've all got their own idea of how they think things should go. And that's never going to change. That's never going to change. So, but I think Washington fans should be really enthused about the way that this staff recruits. I don't think they're shying away from trying to go after some big game, but I also don't think that they're shying away from finding the guy in their own backyard who could be a difference maker, who maybe other teams outside the region aren't looking at. And so I think that's really important to consider as well. And I think it's because of their backgrounds. It's because they understand that some of the best stories that can come out of college football are the underdog stories. You don't want a constant diet of underdog stories, but when you have one or two in your program that really helps elevate, you look at it at Edifuan Ulufoshio, for instance. That's a kid that's elevating this program right now. And he was a walk-on. Washington has a storied history of walk-on players doing big things. And so I think that this all obviously comes together to make this thing work. And I'll be very, very curious to see how these official visits go starting in a month to see if some of your predictions have come true. Because I think there's a very good chance that they could. So we will wrap it up there. For Scott Eklund, this is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com. Go Dogs.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.